Welcome to another edition of She Persisted here on the Progressive Voices Network. My name is Melissa Carter. How are you doing? Are you okay? Especially if you're hunkered down. Even if you're not. You know, I mean, I think we're at a position where we're realizing this is lasting longer than we expected, right? And you could have all kinds of political debates on why we think this is lasting longer. Our illustrious leader and the people who decide that they're still not going to wear masks and go on vacations and stuff. But it is something that's going to linger whether you've decided that you're going to move on with life or not, right? And it's going to be around. It's going to be around until there's a vaccine. And even after the vaccine, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be debates about who gets the vaccine. You're going to have the anti-vaxxers who are going to cause issues. I mean, and no disrespect, but if you're an anti-vaxxer, but I'm certainly not. So I'm dependent on this vaccine to be able to continue my life as normal. So you'll have the distribution issues. You'll have the anti-vaxxer issues. You'll have, you know, is the vaccine going to be effective? So there's a whole other phase that's coming. But it's just from a psychological standpoint, not a political one. It is interesting how I think we're at a place where we're realizing, wait a second, this is going to be going on for a while. Like, I think we thought the end point would be the summer. And the end point is not going to be the summer. And even if everybody had done everything they were supposed to do, it would be a lot easier, yes. But then we would be talking about phase two if we were out of phase one, right? So I just had a virtual doctor's appointment with my doctor, who I will keep her confidential only because, I mean, obviously medical reasons you should, and also because we got in a political discussion. And she knows she can do that with me. So it's not like she's an irresponsible doctor who talks politics with her patients, but she knew my politics, and so we had a discussion. But basically, you know, it is harder on our society because of the lack of leadership to encourage people to social distance and wear your mask. And that's, you know, those two, washing your hands, not touching your face, obviously something that you should do for overall health. But when it comes to this pandemic, on top of that, to wear your mask and to social distance 6 feet or more is something that we should be very diligent about. And we've had kind of lack of leadership to do that. I know here in the city of Atlanta, our mayor had to put the notice out that it's mandatory now to wear a mask. After she tested positive and her family tested positive, you know, I'm sure that added to the fact that, you know, screw this, I'm going to make this order. But it's not that I'm sure she was considering it before that, because, you know, here's the thing. You have to be responsible for yourself. It's just, there's so many issues. And I know we talk about this every week, but I mean, for a lot of us, there's nothing else going on. But I will talk, I mean, we're going to talk about other things, but I understand people don't want to be governed. I understand that people don't want to have a lot of rules. I get that. But if you don't want rules, then you're going to have to handle yourself in a responsible manner for our society. You have to take responsibility for yourself, and you can't just do what you want to do. You have to be part of the collective, have to be part of the society. And masks and 6 feet separation is not a lot to ask when you are interacting with people in society. So, and if you don't want the government to have to say, we've said, well, not everybody in the government's asked you, but it's like, you know, medical science has asked you, science. Science has asked you to do that. If you don't do it, then what do you expect to happen? It's the same in my house. Mr. Carter tries to say, you know, if I encourage him to do this, encourage him to do that, and it's something he needs to do for the betterment of the house, eventually I'm going to put the rules down. So I'm all for not in my backyard, to a certain extent. And then at some point, I'm afraid people need rules, people need leadership, people need structure. I mean, we've needed that since we were babies and learning how to sleep through the night. And guys, we need it. I mean, you need structure. But I did have the appointment with my doctor, and it was a virtual appointment. It was my first time doing a virtual doctor's appointment. Totally forgot to go get my labs done because I have not gone anywhere. I think most doctors now, you get the labs done before you go, and I've totally forgot. But besides that, it was the first virtual appointment. And besides the politics, I mean, we talked about the issues at hand. But more interestingly, she focused a lot on my mental health. So my physical health, yes, and fortunately, knock on wood, you know, I'm doing very well. But she was like, you know, mentally. And so we went through that. And it's, you know, and I teared up a couple times. Because it is, I have to admit that the mental health aspect has become very, very tough lately. And, you know, and I guess I'm one of those that, you know, prides myself on being tough. And I pride myself on not things affecting me. That's not, I'm not that naive, but I do pride myself on handling things. And, you know, even I, who think I'm somewhat self-aware and have been through a lot physically in my life and a lot emotionally through my life, there are times where I underestimate the power of something that I'm experiencing. And not that I didn't think that my mother's death would be something that would be hard, but I think it's just doing it in the pandemic, in the middle of isolation. It's not my mother's death that I think is, I underestimated. It's the environment I'm in. So it's the underestimating the mental toll that I really am undergoing by being so isolated. And there's levels of isolation for everybody. If you're isolated with your family, you have a social unit that you're with. So you're not completely alone. Now that there's struggles with that as well, I'm sure. But for me, I do have Mr. Carter, but not every day. So there's half the week in which I am completely isolated. And normally, for a homebody like me, that's no big deal. Like it wasn't a big deal leading up to my mother's death. But I think my mother's death in May really brought home how compromised my mental stamina was, because it already would be a huge blow. But the fact that I couldn't go anywhere, I couldn't go to a friend's house, I couldn't have anybody hug me, you know, have friends that embraced me. I couldn't have just a hard cry with somebody there. I've had the hard cries. I have not done the hard cries around Mr. Carter. I've done smaller cries around Mr. Carter because I'm not going to completely keep him from seeing what I go through, because I think that's unfair to, you know, it doesn't help prepare a kid for understanding that it's okay to cry. It's okay for things to get to you for a moment. You know, and that your parents are not robots. They actually go through things. However, I underestimated the effect of that. And so, you know, I was very strong after her death. And then just the past couple weeks, it's, you know, and it's something she actually taught me. You know, she used to tell me when people had death in the family, she's like, you know, everybody comes and circles the wagons when it happens. And, you know, this is at a time when people actually were able to go to each other's house. So people were able to, you know, bring food and sit with you. And, you know, and I had fantastic friends, and I had colleagues who, bless their hearts, they gave me Uber Eats certificates. So it was like my the good Southern women that I work with were like, we can't come to your house to bring you food, but we're going to provide you with food. And I was just adorable and unexpected. But, you know, mom would say that when they circle the wagons and when they come and they're checking on you and they're sending flowers and they're bringing food and they're talking to you and you're going through memories and everything's great because you have this collective. But her advice to me, and something she would do, she's like, but wait a couple weeks, wait 2 or 3 weeks. And that's when you send cards or flowers or check on them, because when everybody disappears and moves on with their lives and the person is still sitting in their mourning, that's when the loneliest time comes. And she's absolutely right. And so here with her death, it's the same thing, that it's, you know, a good 3 weeks later. And again, I'm, you know, I can talk about her and I can see pictures of her and I can do, you know, without breaking down, but it's just this melancholy. It's just this, mourning, right? I mean, how else can you describe it? And, you know, my doctor brought up, you know, since we were talking about that. So in the doctor's appointment, the majority of the appointment was about my mental health, which was very sweet. And I'm sure something she's having to do with all her patients, right? Especially if they're isolated. And she was talking about how, you know, again, not to underestimate, not just the fact that it was my mother that passed, but she's like, your last parent that passed. Like, you know, don't be kind to yourself. Like I tell you, it's so funny. The language she was using is what we talk about here on the show. But it was, you know, it's a different thing. It's a new phase of life to be in a world untethered to your parents. And it's undescribable. It's one of those things, and I've said it before, I don't like being the person who says, well, if you haven't been through it, you don't understand, because I think that's kind of rude. But it's, for this, it's indescribable. So it is something that I personally have a hard time communicating unless you have been through it, and then we can have the language. That's what I underestimated. I'd been through my father's death many years ago and went through that process. And death can be, there's positive aspects to death. I know it doesn't, a lot of people may not expect that, but there are spiritually awakening moments that are very, to me, again, very positive, very fulfilling. And I had those experiences with my father's death, and I did have those experiences with my mother's death. But it is, yes, the aftermath. Okay, and you look around and your parents are no longer there. And there's no words to describe it. And so she was right. I mean, that was one of the moments I teared up in the meeting, because I had joked about being an orphan to somebody already and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, she just said, and she brought it home. It's just like, it's a shift. You know, it's not just a loss. It's a shift in your entire life. And the rest of your life will be unlike any other time in your life because of this very thing, the fact that you are on your own. And in your heart, I mean, even though, again, you may be moved away from your parents, but there is something very impactful about not having them in this world. I was grateful that she, you know, just kind of tried to pinpoint it. And I told her, I said, well, that coupled, you know, that on its own is impactful. That on its own is a shift. And I said, but it's, you know, it's multiplied, it's magnified by the fact that I'm sitting in it by myself. So it's one thing to be alone in the world to handle it. It's also being alone in your mourning in the middle of your home that you can't leave. And so I want to focus this first part on mental health and addressing my own, so that you can address your own if you are someone who has not changed your life since March. Because I've decided that I'm seeking therapy. And I've had therapy several times in the past. I haven't had therapy in a few years, but it's like I got to do virtual therapy. I've got to figure out a way to maintain my mental health, because we don't know how long this is going to last. So I think we all had kind of a deadline in our mind that, oh, well, this will be back to normal in the summertime. Because, you know, I remember even having conversations about, oh, well, the virus is, you know, doesn't handle heat very well. I mean, like, we had all these theories to justify our belief that this is temporary, right? And, you know, schools are now debating whether to open. Everybody's not handling this now that it's lasting too long. Like, everybody's now, the patience is gone. And I think that's because we have this false deadline of the summer. With your mental health, again, you know, I told the doctor, I was like, well, you know, I've done my best to keep me physically healthy. I said, I've been able to control what comes into my house. And I mean, we all have the ability to control what comes into our house grocery wise. But I'm like, I've been very diligent. I said, up until this point, I've really had the idea of like being an athlete in a marathon. And the training is different. Like, you don't just live your normal life. You eat differently. You train differently. You have a different mental capacity. And, you know, again, with a marathon, you know, it's happening and it's over. Well, the difference with this is we don't know when this marathon's going to end. And so I said, you know, I've been very good about making sure that health-wise that I'm eating what I need to eat. Fortunately, Mr. Carter is not a sugar freak. Vanilla wafer cookies. Somehow my son... not vanilla wafer, but vanilla cream. So like the Oreos that are blonde, that is my son. He doesn't like the Oreo brand. He likes other brands. But the vanilla cream cookies, that and donuts are the two desserts that my son loves. Okay. And fortunately for me, vanilla cream cookies are not, you know, I'm have a terrible sweet tooth, but that's the only dessert in the house. Donuts every now and again, but vanilla cream cookies. So if I indulge, that's all I'm indulging in. The rest of the time I'm eating fruits and vegetables and meats and being healthy. I've been good about hydrating. I've been trying to do that. And I told her, I said, I've done that for the purpose of not wanting to regret when this is over how I handled it when I was in my own home and taking care of my own stuff and not being in a rush and not being at work and not having to go to the vending machine and not having, you know, like you shouldn't have to do that anyway. But I'm one of those that sometimes if I don't prepare my food well enough that I go to the candy dish, I go to the vending machine. So anyway, that's something that I think that you can physically control because you visually see it, right? And when I started the pandemic and this isolation, I stopped, and I told you this, I stopped watching the news and I did, you know, I had projects and I had creative projects. But I will say that when mom died, a lot of that went away. Like I got out of my routine, got out of my exercise routine because getting up to exercise and then I would go about my work day. And I, you know, it was probably the past, gosh, couple weeks that there have been moments where I'm like, I can't handle this, or I've just been so depressed I didn't feel like doing anything. I've been with Mr. Carter and I've put on a face for him, but in my mind I'm thinking, I just don't feel like doing shit. I told the doctor, I'm like, I kind of see that. It's almost like I observe that from the outside in. So I said the good news was that I didn't lose myself so much in it that I wasn't aware of what was happening. Like I'm seeing myself lose it. And if you follow me on Instagram, Melissa Carter ATL, I started doing virtual walks. I don't run, but there's all these virtual runs, these 5Ks, 10Ks, 1Ks. And so I started signing up for them just to give me the goal of doing it. I mean, it's an honor system because you sign up for it, you get the medal. Sometimes you get t-shirts, sometimes you get medals. You know, you always get swag. But I signed up for them so that I, you know, would do it. And I do it. Like if I sign up for it, I don't put the shirt on or put the medal up until I've actually completed. And it's a 5K. But for me, that's a big deal. So I've started doing that again because I think exercise really helps you mentally. But the therapy, like it's like things have gotten more complicated the further I'm in it. And now that there's no end in sight, then I got to figure out a way to do this. And I got in the habit of checking the news and checking Facebook and checking these fools who are out there arguing a point that is ridiculous. And I started getting discouraged by it. The thing is, for me, a litmus test is, you know, if I still care about people, even if I don't agree with them, then I'm in a good place. So if I still have compassion for everybody, then I'm in a good space. Because if you're happy in your own world, then you have easily the ability to have compassion for others. But the past couple of weeks, I haven't had compassion. Past couple of weeks, I could give a shit about these people who are fools and who are making it harder on everybody. And you heard me last week just express my concerns about people forcing those of us who have to take this very seriously to still be at home and still deal with our mental health and our physical health. And so, yeah, and that's another sign. It's like, I got to stop watching the news again. I got to stop this. I got to stop looking for information because it's not making me feel any better, and it's making me dislike people, and it's making me feel fractured from people. And that's, like I said, that's not the point. We cannot get so far removed from one another that, you know, like I said earlier, the anti-vaxxers who are going to come a-calling when this vaccine is released and protest that as well. You know, I can't have anger and hate in my heart which I think a lot of people are having for one side or the other. And I think it's unfortunate. So anyway, so those for me personally, those are my litmus tests. Those are the ways that I determine if I'm in a good space. And I have not been in a good space. I'm not going to give up on myself. And neither should you. And you can't, and you have to find out what's good for you. I wanted to share that to let you know that, again, it's the same theme. It's the same, be your own best friend. It's the same, you know, don't give up on yourself. It's the same, you got to, you know, your world is your world based on within. And if I'm not feeling happy and fulfilled and good at the moment or solid, then my world's going to reflect that. I got to get that shit in order. Got to get my shit together. Especially because we don't know when this is going to end. And that's the thing that, you know, the doctor and I were talking about. She's like, in the medical community, she said, it's tough on us because we are getting, you know, the information is becoming more consistent now. But she's in the beginning, it would change on a daily basis. And we had to adapt to that. And we had to figure out how to keep our practices up, how to make sure our patients were okay. And she's like, if you go in the hospitals with the people that are actually fighting this virus, it's a real thing. And there's the battlefront. You know, if we had another president, let me just focus on the what ifs. We had something else. If we had another president who was a better leader involved in this virus, then you would see that leader all masked up going into these hospitals, going into these units. Like if I was the president and this was happening, then I would put myself in the same attire that the people on the battlefront were wearing, and I would go in there. And I probably wouldn't allow the president to go too far in, but still just have the experience to go in and talk to the people who were actually having to deal with this stuff and see and expose the people to understand this is what it's like. Like, that's the other thing, is this is what it's like to have it. This is what it's like when it's the most severe case, when somebody actually is dying from it. This is what it's like. And make it personal and make people understand that, you know, there's just constantly try to educate the public, And then at the same time, try to incorporate all people who have different opinions about things. You figure it out to where you try to bring people together and educate people all on the same level. But the way that we've dealt with this, and it's embarrassing. I thought it, and again, like I said, the past couple of weeks have been tough. I was going to get Mr. Carter the other day, and I thought, if I didn't have Mr. Carter, I probably would move out of this fucking country. I was just so fed up with the embarrassment of how now we're on our own on this. Talking about being on your own, the United States, our stats are unique to the world. Everybody else is getting better. Everybody else is recovering. Everybody else is being able to open up in a comfortable manner, where in a cohesive manner. And I mean, it's not like everybody else doesn't have crazies in their communities. And that's such a disrespectful word. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, that's how I felt the past couple of weeks, is that the inmates have taken over the asylum. And how they, the least educated, the least scientifically minded, are the ones that are in control of everything is what I don't understand. How we got to this point. But here we are. And we have to deal with it. And again, my goal is not to get in the mire of criticism and negativity, because that's just not who I am. And I mean, I certainly can get there. I can certainly be that person, but I don't want to be. And so I'm working on making sure I'm not that way. And I hope that same for you, that if you are someone who, whether you're by yourself or whether you're with a family that is not getting along, or in an abusive situation, or under stress because of work and not wanting to go back, or feeling the pressure to have to go back, or whatever it is, you know, you just have to decide for yourself what makes you feel better. And if that's exercise, if that's therapy, if that's creativity, if that's reading, if that's just quiet time, whatever it is, to really focus on that mental health, really focus on your mental health, and because you hear it and we see it. But I think, gosh, I think right now people are realizing the true effect of the past few months on them, and with the daunting task of having to move forward for as many months, if not more, before we get through this completely. I was having a conversation with a friend about advertising and how advertising still works. I know that that is a industry right now that's struggling because of the pandemic, but we were talking about how commercials, you know, what commercials affected you and how commercials that kind of tug at your heart are the ones that really work. And he brought up a commercial from years ago. He said it was a Coke commercial where it's a father and son. I think they're watching a sunset. And all the child says to the father is, "Do it again, Dad." And it, you know, it caused, it told a whole story, caused a emotional response for those that can relate to a special moment with a parent or, you know, so an adult that was a positive influence on your life. And then I responded by saying, well, it's those Thanksgiving salt and pepper shakers from Publix, or it's any Publix commercial during the holidays where they show the couple, the elderly couple moving in the neighborhood. No, or is it the new young couple and the elderly couple brings them food? But the importance of loved ones and food gatherings, and it's Publix, right? And then we talked about different advertising campaigns that didn't go well. I remember I made a C in marketing. By the way, now I work at a marketing firm. How ironic is that? But I made a C in marketing back in the day at UT, and Go Vols. And there were a couple stories. Like one was, I think when the Energizer Bunny came out, the competitor did an ad campaign that was very similar, thinking that's the answers I have to mimic. And it ended up that whatever the competitor did, because now I can't remember, maybe it was Eveready, they did something. And the Energizer Bunny benefited from it. So people saw the commercial for Eveready or whoever it was, and then they went and bought Energizer Bunny batteries, and the Energizer Bunny made a ton of money. And he brought up the fact that he thinks that Pepsi does a disservice by doing all these challenges with Coke, because if you are in second place and you reference first place thinking that's how you're going to win, you're giving the first place more advertising, right? So we had this discussion. Well, the reason I bring that up is the storytelling or the impact of advertising is very impactful. And I think that print ads still have a place. For a lot of people, they may dismiss a billboard or dismiss a magazine print ad. But I think that, you know, one that I want to share with you is one that's is pretty to the point. But it's something that I never thought about. And, of course, it brings an emotional response. And not necessarily one that is all positive, because this is talking about domestic violence. But it is the Purple Leash Project. And I'm not endorsing them. I have not worked with them. I have not given money to them. I just ripped out a print ad. And it's a nonprofit, obviously, print ad that Purina and Red Rover have invested in. And it talks about 48% of domestic violence victims, and I'm just reading from, this is the headline. It shows a woman embracing a dog, and then the overlay of that image is in big font. 48% of domestic violence victims don't leave because they can't bring their pets. Nearly half of domestic violence victims don't leave because they can't bring their pets. And so that brings about a response in several ways, right? But the Purple Lease Project, you know, for those who are affected by that community or interested in that cause, again, Purple Lease Project, I have never worked with them. I don't know anything about them. But their ad worked because I ripped it out, made sure that I took a look at it. You know, something else in advertising, I posted this on She Persisted on our Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook, you can look up She Persisted Show and you'll find our Facebook page. And I post things there that I don't get a chance to talk about necessarily during the week. But one of them was an ad by a Swiss company. It was a campaign in Switzerland regarding women. And it's something I didn't think about. And again, it's a print ad. But it has to do with the perception of women based on what she wears. Because the thought I had, when you think about advertising to women, so much of it, to me, is ridiculous, right? Like you have the, especially women in anything to do with like shaving or lotion. If you watch, especially television commercials of women shaving and putting on lotion, it you think they're masturbating. You think it is some kind of pre-sexual routine that they do because they're just the look of ecstasy on their face and they're just rubbing their leg as they're shaving it, or they're delicately, their fingers extended as they bring their fingers up their arm as they're putting on their lotion, and they just, the look on their face is, oh, I'm so glad that I have this lotion. I'm like, I don't look that way when I'm shaving. I'm trying to balance myself in the shower because I have yet to put a shower stool in there so that I could, my 50-year-old self is trying to do yoga in the shower, trying not to fall. And also when I put lotion on, it's pretty vigorously. Like I'm just trying to get it on. I'm trying to slap it on, right? So I'm always rolling my eyes at campaigns toward women. But it must work. I mean, here I am a woman who rolls my eyes at it, but obviously people are responding to it. Now, I know with Dove, when they started the Real Women campaign and Real Body Image campaign, I did buy more Dove products because of that. So I kind of wanted to reward them for showing different styles of women. But in this Swiss campaign, they are talking about gender equality, and they're talking about, again, how women are judged by the way that they dress. And so, and I'm trying to reference who the campaign is for, but I'm going to mispronounce it because it looks very, very French pronunciation. So it is several images of women. It's one of a woman from her chin down to the top of her breast line. And it's almost like a ruler. It's almost like a line with ruler marks on it. And depending on how low her neckline is what people interpret her as. So, for instance, if she wears her neckline up at her neck, she's a prude. If it's at her collarbone, she's old-fashioned. If it's a little below her collarbone, she's a bore. If it gets there midway, she's a tease. If she goes down any further, she's a little cheeky. If she goes down further, she's asking for it. And if she's down at her breast line, she's a slut. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Slut above the breast line, whore if she gets to the cleavage. Then they show the skirt. And they show a woman's legs, and they talk about mid-calf, she's a prude. So again, it's prude, old-fashioned, bore, tease, cheeky, asking for it, slut, whore. And it just depends on where that line is. And the same with shoes. And so they show a woman's feet and showing the size of her heel. People interpret who she is based on that. So think to yourself, are you that way? I mean, and again, go to She Persisted Show on our Facebook page and you can see that ad. But are you that way? Because a lot of times I think we interpret judgment of women as men, that men are the ones that are making these judgments. Well, men make a lot of these judgments a lot of the time. But, you know, the real issue for me is that women make the same judgments. And so women are saying the same thing about where somebody is wearing their clothes. Have I done it? Of course I've done it in my life. But I'm trying to be, again, more aware. And for me, I get, you know, I'm trying to think when I dress, I don't think about that as much. My neckline, I just try to find something that seems flattering. I don't think about, you know, if it's to my cleavage and it's flattering, then I'll wear it. I'm not trying to make a statement with my tops or my skirts or my heels. I don't wear heels anymore, but I did. I just try to do what I think looks good to me and what feels comfortable to me. The struggle I've had lately is more age appropriate. And it's not having to do with, clothes in general necessarily. It has to do with t-shirts. Because maybe it's because I'm in radio, maybe because it was fashionable. I know that in the 2000s, for sure, it seemed like there was a trend for printed t-shirts. I mean, I guess there always has been, right? I mean, I loved, concert t-shirts back in the 70s and 80s, but in the 2000s in particular, I remember being on the Burt Show and some of the interns who were 10 years younger than I am, they would wear, you know, these t-shirts that says, and I would put the same t-shirts on, you know, we had a t-shirt competition and it was fun because I was in my 30s, right? Well, and now I'm in my 50s and I'm thinking, are some of these t-shirts appropriate? There was one time that Katie, when she and I were together, and she's a professional, and she she was at my place and we weren't living together yet, so she was borrowing some of my clothes and she needed to borrow a t-shirt. She was trying to find a t-shirt that she could wear to work, and she couldn't find one that was appropriate because, for instance, I would have t-shirts. I think the one that just made her have to say something to me was, it was an image of the outline of the state of North Carolina and the outline of the state of South Carolina. The two of them on the shirt, and the tagline was North Carolina because we like being on top. So, you know, those kind of shirts. And now I got rid of those after that incident, but, you know, I have all these t-shirts. So it's more of it is about the fact that they're taking up too much drawer space. But the other part of it is, you know, is my Star Wars t-shirt, is my Star Trek t-shirt. I mean, I've got plenty of University of Tennessee t-shirts because, and the thing is with the Star Trek and Star Wars and all that, those are my Dragon Con t-shirts. Of course, Dragon Con, unfortunately, this year going to be virtual and not in person, but I wouldn't have been able to go if it was in person anyway, just out of caution. So I'm sure a lot of people fell into that space. So they're virtual this year. So those shirts won't be worn this year. Tennessee, obviously, I can wear those to work because we have Friday college days at work. So if they're useful, but if I'm just hanging around in them, I don't know where it came from. Nobody said recently that something was wrong with my shirts and nobody's commented on my age or anything, but there's a part of me, it's like, well, if I'm getting rid of something, if I'm downsizing, I think that's where the conversation came in my head. If I'm downsizing, what should I get rid of? And I think my t-shirts right now are a focus of, consideration of, is it something that should I still have these or not? I don't think there's anything inappropriate in any of them, but I'll have to check. Before we end the show, I wanted to share with you a virtual speech that I gave to a group of women called What Women Want. It's a networking group. If you are interested in finding out more, whatwomenwantnetworking.com is the website. I have several friends who are part of this group, and I joined the group after I did the speech because of the women I met in that Zoom meeting. And they are a group of women who are helping each other, because one of the things that men have perfected, or certain men, especially ambitious men, have perfected over time, is that success professionally comes from networking. And some women don't understand that concept or don't want to pursue that line of practice in their business, but it is what makes you more financially successful. I can contest in my own career that most of the jobs that I have received have been through word of mouth. There have been very few jobs where I submitted a resume And I did an interview, and then I was hired. That was probably early in my career. But everything since then has pretty much been through networking. And so I understand that, and I appreciated the invite from these women. I decided that I wanted to talk about activism, because for women to get what they really want, they have to be an advocate for themselves, have to be an activist for themselves, regardless of what that is. And in this climate of Black Lives Matter, in this climate of healthcare and protests of people who, from either side of the fence, feel the need to protest their rights or their feelings about something. And it could be anything else. There's still environmental issues going on that get buried in the headlines. So I wanted to talk about activism, whether on a professional or a personal point, perspective, but I thought the lessons might be useful to you as well. So here it is, the speech I gave to the What Women Want networking group.
What I wanted to talk today is about activism. So like Araya said, you know, what women want, what you want, you're an activist for yourself. But I think in this climate of COVID-19 and people having a passionate view one way or the other about how we should handle it with Black Lives Matter and a lot of passion that's come from that, I thought it was appropriate to talk about activism and how emotions can start you off on the right path, but sometimes you don't stay. You know, you putter out and you lose energy. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So I think that with activism, again, you can translate this on a personal level, on a business level, or if you are involved in some kind of cause, it will benefit that. I've broken it out to 6 points that I wanted to share with you. So the first one is there's always bad news to find. Okay, so if you're part of a movement of any kind, whether it's for women's rights, whether it's for Black Lives Matter, immigration rights, LGBT, you get in this routine of a constant fight and struggle because there's always bad news, right? And when you fight for something, you get it, you might get it, you might not, but if you get it, then you find something else that you need to achieve, and it seems like you're always doing something for the fight. So the first point is that you have to continue even when you don't feel like it, all right? So, and we'll talk a little bit later of an example in Black Lives Matter that is a concern of mine when talking about you have to continue even if you don't feel like it, even when you think all is lost, and how you can get through that. That's a point later on. But first, I want to share a story in my second point about vowing not to be a bitter old activist, to somebody who has a bad attitude the older they get. So I got my degree from the University of Tennessee, my bachelor's degree in broadcasting. But when I moved to Atlanta, I joined Georgia State University and got my graduate certificate in women's studies. And so I was one of the first members of the graduate program of women's studies at Georgia State University. And it was predominantly women professors, and they were all activists during the civil rights movement, women's lib. And one of the things I noticed when I was there, and I was there as a, you know, 23, 24-year-old, was the fact that a lot of the women seemed to be bitter. They seemed to be frustrated. When they taught the class, you could tell that there was a fatigue in teaching the history of women and the history of women's rights and the struggles that we faced. But I think that their fatigue came from the fact that they didn't see the results they wanted to see. And I felt really frustrated at the time because I had already marched on Washington for pro-choice rights, and I was already an activist in high school. And so when I got to college and got to graduate school, you know, and if anybody's been in graduate school, you know that the classes are much smaller, it's a more intimate setting. And I felt frustrated because I was already motivated, and I thought, I'm going to be inspired. This is going to be fantastic. I was inspired, but not in the way I thought. What I was inspired by was, again, the fact that I vowed never to be an older, bitter protester because they seemed disappointed in the work they had done, and I didn't like to see that. And moving on to the third point, and it's all the same story, but there's a caution in that point that you have to know that younger people are watching you, okay? And we'll talk about feeling frustrated or disappointed in a minute. But just know that people are watching you. Just like when you were a kid, most of the lessons that I know for me, I learned from my parents, was not something that they directly told me, it was in watching their actions and how they handled the world and their responses. And something else I was going to bring up earlier, my mother passed away a month ago. So that's something else in the networking that, you know, I may be coming to you for grief counseling, but my mother was my hero. And I think a lot of the things that I learned were from her, but again, not by something she said to me, but by things that she did and I observed. And so the same with you in your life. There may be young women out there, and young men too, because young men need to be inspired about women's rights, that are watching you and how you handle the world. And even when you're tired, and even when you're disappointed, when you're overwhelmed or busy, just remember that you are always a role model for the people around you. At your gathering coming up, at the restaurant, you're a role model for the staff at Ippolito's. You're a role model for everybody. So, you know, if you've ever been in the media, you know, one of the things you learn in the media, especially when you're in the spotlight, is you're always on. People are always watching you. And I welcome that. It does not bother me. But for some people who are new, it does bother them because they feel that there may be a violation or they feel too vulnerable. But you have to understand, this is something that is a passion of yours and should be a passion of yours 24/7. And one of the things that I realized that I've stopped doing is I've stopped using the terms war and fight, war on drugs, the war on COVID-19, the fight for women's rights. And the reason I've stopped using the words war and fight is because I don't think those words motivate. And the reason I don't think those words motivate is because there is an end point. Usually, anytime we observe a fight or we observe a war or study one, there's always a beginning and an end. And I think that for a lot of people, impatience comes in because you're using fight and war. You think that there's going to be an immediate resolution to what you're trying to do. And evolution is a constant thing. And I think in the case with women's rights, with your own rights, whatever it is, it's a lifelong journey. It's a lifelong, I mean, there's sometimes a struggle, but to me, it's a lifelong privilege to be in a position of awareness, to understand that you're fighting for yourself, you're fighting for other women, or you're fighting for whatever cause you have. And evolution is a constant thing. It happened before we were born. It's going to happen after we die. And I think if you understand that it's not a fight, it's not a war, it's part of your journey, and it will always be there, then I think it's much easier for you to be a part of it and not get overwhelmed by it. Now, the question I have for everybody as an activist on whatever level is, what are you trying to, you know, what you're trying to achieve may not happen in your lifetime, and are you okay with that? And I'll repeat that. If you're an activist for anything, what you are trying to achieve may not happen in your lifetime, and are you okay with that? And that is a lesson I learned going back to graduate school, because for these women that were my professors, as wonderful as they are, they did not get what they wanted in their lifetime, and they were not okay with that. And it resonated, and I felt it. And it was, again, it wasn't, it was a low energy. We talked about, you know, we talked about energy already today. You got to keep that energy up. And so I want to go to Black Lives Matter, because one of my concerns with Black Lives Matter is I've been inspired by everything I've seen. I've been inspired and mentioned to so many of my friends, more so not just the numbers, but the different colors of the skin of the people that are fighting for Black Lives Matter and the different countries that are fighting for Black Lives Matter. And for me, from the outside looking in, it looks different. The fight looks a little different. It looks more progressive, and it gives me hope. The concern I have is that the election is not for 5 more months. And so I think that going back to the energy and knowing this is an evolution and knowing it's a lifelong battle, 5 months ago was before this pandemic, right? And it seems like we've been in the middle of this for years. Mm-hmm. However, the election is 5 months away. And so can you keep the momentum up for 5 months, for 5 years, for 50 years, for 70 years, for 100 years, you know, and you can't give up, and you can't, again, inspire other people to give up by frustration that you may feel. Of course, you're human. You're going to feel the frustration. But again, all these points, and we can discuss this after the fact, is to keep you going. And that's the example of Black Lives Matter, because that's an immediate cause. But for women as well, I mean, there's so many things, like Araya said, there's so many things that we haven't achieved yet, but there's so many things we have achieved. And from a 20-something grad student, I saw from again, the outside looking in, how much had happened for women between 1970 and 1995 when I was in grad school, but the women that I was a part of seemed to not see it for what it was. And so I encourage you to change your mindset that anything you're doing is a lifelong commitment, and it's like a marriage. So again, instead of using war and fight, think of it as a marriage. You're married to what your cause is. You're married to your activism. And if you understand that, then I think you're in the right mindset. I'm going to get to the most important points. But first, true activism is you're trying to make the world a better place, not you a better place. I think that's another mindset to change. Activism is trying to make the world a better place, not you a better place. And in doing so, you're gonna benefit from the byproduct of it. But you have to remember, you're trying to make the world a better place. And if the other point to resolve in yourself is that what you're doing, you are fighting for people that don't care about the cause right now, but will benefit from your efforts later. And that's another thing I've noticed, especially when it comes to what women want and women's rights. There's a lot of women out there that don't care the same way that other women care, and sometimes are an obstacle in the way of trying to get what you want. However, you're still fighting for them. You're fighting for people that don't care about your cause, but are going to benefit from it. And you need to be okay with that, because again, you're doing this for the greater good, not for your good. And you're doing it for people who don't understand that it's actually for the greater good. So that's something to also resolve. But the two main points, the last two points I want to bring up, to allow you to maintain that energy to move forward in whatever it is that you're fighting for, is benchmarks and goals is number one, okay? When I was on the Burt Show, we were a very successful morning show. It's still a very successful morning show, but I was a part of it from the beginning and the first 10 years of that show. And the producer on the show at one point said to us, I kind of wish we had stopped and celebrated our victory before we move forward, because we got to the point where we had inner conflict and the original members of the show all left the show. And that was the point in which we should have stopped and celebrated our victories instead of trying to keep going and going, because we all got overwhelmed by some of the things that were happening and we decided that we were going to leave the show. So when you're fighting for something that's going to last a lifetime, when you're fighting for something that's going to last beyond your lifetime, the most important thing is to set a goal, like Araya with everybody, what do you want, you know, asking today, set a goal. And when you achieve that goal, stop for a second and celebrate yourself. Yeah. Don't forget to stop and celebrate, okay? You achieved a goal. You should celebrate that goal. Take some time off from your activism, even if it's just for a day, if it's for a week, or if you want to take a year off. You've done something, you should celebrate it. Because the problem I see with activists of all realms is that they run out of steam because they never stop to enjoy their work. And it goes back to our first point, is what happens when you do that is you're always looking at what's wrong. You're always looking at the bad news. Like you, it's almost self-defeating that, oh, I did this, oh, but then this is happening, so now I've got to work on this. You got to stop and you got to celebrate those benchmarks, because if you don't, you absolutely will run out of steam. And the last point I want to make is that you cannot ever feel lesser than. If you feel that way in your struggle with what you're doing, you're going to have to stop that mindset, because anybody that we admire, the people that we admire and the ones that we see make change are people who never have that attitude. So I have a 5-year-old son with another woman, and she and I are no longer together, but we're still very good friends and we're still doing great at co-parenting. And a lesson that she taught me years ago was, she said, the problem with this world, and it's the source of all the problems in this world, is there are always people who have to feel better or lesser than somebody else. She said, if nobody felt better than somebody else and nobody felt lesser than somebody else, she said, it would solve all the problems in this world. And I always remembered her saying that, because it's the truth. You're self-defeating if you actually believe that you are lesser than somebody else. It's a different mindset when it comes to women and their salaries, when it comes to you and your own home, whatever the cause is. You have to believe that you have the right to do whatever it is you want, that you deserve it, and that you're equal to everybody else. Nobody is better than you, and nobody is lesser than you. Everybody's on the same page. And if you have that mindset, then you can keep going. But if you start thinking you're a victim, if you start having the attitude that, you know what, the world is doing this to me and it keeps doing this to me and I'm tired of it, you definitely are not going to have the energy to move forward, and you're not inspiring anybody because you're not even inspiring yourself. So on She Persisted on my podcast, at the end of every show, I say you've got to learn to be your own best friend. I think somebody mentioned earlier about when you having vitality when you're older and being able to look in the mirror, like you got to stop criticizing yourself in the mirror. You've got to stop criticizing the decisions you make. You got to stop criticizing wanting anything. You got to stop criticizing, you know, wanting to be rich or wanting to be powerful or whatever it is you want. You got to stop judging yourself for wanting anything, because you have to be your own best friend. You wouldn't tell a best friend you don't deserve that. So why do you say it to yourself? And I say that on the podcast. That's the message I give every episode, every week, is you have to learn to be your own best friend and truly be your own best friend. Serve you as well as you serve your best friend. And the same with this. You are not lesser than anybody else. You deserve to be here. Us being born beats the odds, because far more children aren't born than are born. There's a lot more kids that don't make it into this world that do. And so just by being alive, you belong here. And so those are the points about activism. You have got to make sure that you don't feel like you're lesser than or better than somebody else. You've got to be somebody that has a benchmark and goal and willing to celebrate it. That's the other thing. Those two are relative, because if you don't stop and take a break, we talk about road trips and RVs. Well, you go on a rest stop on a long road trip. You know, you need a break. You got to stretch your legs. The same with activism. You got to take the time to stretch your legs. Don't think of things as war and as a fight, because that in its own language says that there's going to be an end to it. There may not be an end to it. And you have to be okay with that. And you cannot end up being the older, bitter activist and bitter person who thinks, well, you know what? I didn't get what I wanted. So guess what? I give up. Because that selfish attitude, again, you're making the world a better place, not you a better place. And there's always going to be good news, but there's always more. There's always going to be bad news, but there's always more good news out there. So I'm with Araya on that attitude, that I believe that everybody's good at heart. I believe that most evil things that are happening, the things that frustrate me, are taught. They're not nature. Mm-hmm. The purpose of this life is to find joy. I mean, we're here to find joy. And I think a lot of times when there's struggle, it's self-imposed. This is not something that we were meant to feel, but we do it to ourselves, and we can unravel that, and we can untie that knot, and we can find joy. And you have the ability to have the vitality and the sustainability to keep that going throughout your life and find joy in it instead of struggle.
Again, whatwomenwantnetworking.com is the website to find out more if you would like to be part of this great group of women. And men. Men are not excluded. I want you to be your own best friend. There's a lot of changes going on in all of our lives. I'll share some more changes that have been happening in my life moving forward in the next few episodes. I just want to encourage you to give yourself a break. I was told that by someone in the past few days, to be kind to yourself, give yourself a break, because you sometimes aren't conscious enough of how much stress that is going on in your existence at the moment. And you just need to kind of relax a little bit and go into a mode of caring for yourself, caring for others, and try to not harm yourself, meaning stress-wise, eating-wise, exercise, whatever it is that you're doing that actually makes you feel worse, you need to stop. Say no to things and just relax a little bit into things. And not everything has to be done perfectly, correctly right now. Just be easy on yourself. I also gave that advice to a friend of mine who is a single mom of a very small child that she's hunkered down with. And there are days that are very trying for her. And I helped talk her through that. So it goes again, you know, emotional networking. We're here for each other, or should be here for each other. And you should be there for yourself. So be kind to yourself. Be your own best friend. And we will talk next time. Bye-bye.
Say, this is Mr. Carter.
This is Mr. Carter.
And you're listening to?
Listen to?
My mom.
My mom.
On She Persisted.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble.